We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Fridays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/yttw and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/calltw. So you think
and welcome to the Atheist Experience. Today is the 6th of March, and I'm your host, Jim Burrows, and joining me today is J-Mike. How's it going, J-Mike?
Good. I'm right below you, if you can't tell. I'm circling you underneath the water.
I see that. Yeah. And as long as you stay down there and I stay up there and we keep the mast up and the keel down, we'll be okay.
Keeping you in check.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of boats, I do have something to admit. I was wrong last time I was on. They were using iron metal rivets to hold boats together, at least in the Viking era and later. They did have the same problems that I mentioned, but I was actually incorrect. I'm very, very surprised and shocked. I wouldn't think they'd use something like that, but apparently they did. But the problems that I listed were somewhat correct. Whether or not they did as far back as what Noah would have done, I don't know. But they were done. So when I said it wasn't, I was incorrect. I did know they use nails, which is different. And I know we use like bolts today for three bolting stuff, but those are different things. So I wanted to clarify that real quick. You got anything coming up, J-Mike?
Well, did Truth Wanted? This is kind of the end of the loaded weekend. I know you had your loaded day today with Talk Heathen and Atheist Experience. So I had mine a little spaced out, but it's been good. I'm going to start the work week again. So it's all coming to a crash pretty quickly.
Yeah, unfortunately, the weekends do have to come to an end. So the Atheist Experience is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 organization dedicated to the promotion of positive atheist culture and the separation of religion and government. Are we ready for the first call?
Always ready.
All right. Let's do Mark in Australia. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jim. Hi, J-Mike. How are you today?
Good.
I'm doing just fine.
I'm good.
Go ahead. You wanted to talk about simulation theory and the problem of faith?
Yes. So my take on, I suppose, reality is that we are living in a simulation. But the issue that I personally have with it is I almost have to take it as an issue of faith that it's true because I can't prove it.
Okay. Is faith a good pathway to truth?
Well, I would prefer to have concrete evidence to prove that what I believe exists, but I can't point towards something that would show, yes, we are in a simulation when I can't. So my personal issue with it is that I'd prefer it to not be an issue of faith and that I could point to someone something and say, yes, this is real and I can prove it, rather than going, well, I just have to have faith that it could be real.
So it sounds like you're saying, no, faith is not a good pathway to truth.
I would prefer for it not to be.
Yeah, and a lot of us would prefer to have a lot of things, but that doesn't make it true. I mean, you can say you favor the idea, but to say you believe in it without evidence, is that rational?
Well, I would agree with the... I would prefer it to be true.
Yeah. But to say you believe in it, I mean, that's going a bit... That to me is going a bit far, right?
Well, depending on your definition of belief, I would like to believe that it's true. It makes sense to me, but I can't prove it. So that's where my faith issue came in.
Can I ask you to kind of clean up the waters there? Because you said what you mean by believe. Like, if I asked you the proposition, whether or not you think we live in a simulation, you would respond with either a true or false value. Presumably it's going to be true, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you hold that the proposition on the table is true, right? So we can kind of cash that out in terms of what people believe, like the propositional attitudes towards some proposition that they have. But it sounds like you already had said it earlier. You're saying that it's something you prefer to believe. And I kind of hold to faith being a testament to what people prefer to believe, but you don't really choose those things. Like, you're convinced for a reason. So there's got to be some underlying reason that you have, other than just picking the belief. There has to be something that's convinced you that it's true.
Well, through all of my experiences and searching for truth and examining the various options of what happens to you after you die, simulation theory makes the most sense to me.
Sure. And so what's the inconsistency with a view that's opposite or antithetical to that, right? And say, like, what would be the inconsistency in that view? Because I'm wondering why you would hold to that if you couldn't point, like, what would be the inconsistency in saying that the world is just natural and not simulated with all the things that you have baked into the simulation?
Well, with simulation theory, multiple things can be true at the same time. For example, when Christians try to argue, yes, Jesus really did exist, and atheists say there isn't enough evidential proof to show that he existed apart from some eyewitness documents from thousands of years ago, or when Christians say, I believe that the Bible is true because the Bible says it's true, but it's a very circular argument where if you were to try to ask a Christian, can you explain?
Can I cut you off real quick? Because I'm sorry to cut you off, but like the question is, what would be inconsistent with the things that you believe there being just accounted for by, say, naturalism or something like that, right? What would be the hang up? Because if we can just take the two theories and they're like on an they're on a par from terms of generating an expectation, right? There's nothing new in the future that's gonna put one kind of ahead in the race as the other. Then I don't know what grounds you have. So what would be the inconsistency with everything you think about reality that couldn't be the case for naturalism?
Naturalism doesn't explain what happens after you die.
So, but it does. It says that you don't have brain function and you cease to process information, right? So it does have an answer to the question. So I don't, okay. Right? You're just, you would be assuming that there would be some essence to continue living, but it explains that pretty close. Like, it's a pretty close, look, on one end you have, it's weird because you're looking for an explanation, and the explanation is it explains what happens when after we die on one end, but we don't even know what that looks like, right? So I don't know what it's actually explaining, but on the other end, it's kind of closed, right? It's like closed off in parentheses. It's like when you die, your brain stops functioning. You don't process information. And it's a lot like when you existed in the year 1902. So to me, it sounds like that has a more fleshed out explanation than the other one, because the other one can't even tell you what the other side would look like.
Okay. Well, I suppose my, not necessarily argument, but discussion point would be, rather than framing it as simulation theory or naturalism versus the atheist point of view, it would be more like simulation theory versus the Christian point of view or the New Age point of view or some other religious point of view that posits that something happens after you die.
Yeah, but that's just... Sorry, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I would say atheism doesn't actually necessarily oppose... simulation theory. It's simply a simple statement that we do not accept as true the claim that there is a God. We reject that claim. Some of us go a step further and some of us don't, and there's a lot of mix in there. But with simulation theory, you're not necessarily proposing a God. You're just proposing we're in a simulation. And so there's no God necessarily involved. So I'm not sure. And when you say the atheist point of view, we're a Venn diagram of beliefs and points of view that have one overlapping point. That is, we don't. We reject the claim that there's a God, one or more gods. So it's not even really a wide point of view. But simulation theory and Christianity don't also necessarily oppose each other, because the Christian God could exist in some simulation, or he could have existed in a prior iteration of the simulation and doesn't exist now if it's a simulation. But I don't see what simulation theory actually does for you in terms of the power of explanation of anything that naturalism doesn't do better.
It doesn't even say you would continue living. It just could be the same process of ceasing to not be in the simulation.
Okay.
So like one way to look at it is the simulation theory you're applying could be kind of nested in naturalism, right? Like you just say that there's this natural world that simulates and then that's what we experience. But if you really think about that, you're adding something extra there, right? And if you add something extra, like any theory, right, you make it a little bit more complicated. You have to substantiate that claim in a way, but it's hard to like criticize you on it because you've already said you just take it on faith, which to me is just saying I trust that it's true, and I can trust a lot of things that are true that aren't actually true.
I agree with you.
So wouldn't a better answer just to say I don't know and then just stay there until you do know?
Definitely. I just wanted, I suppose, another point of view along the lines of not saying that the concrete atheist worldview is obviously, as Jim said before, that you don't believe that a God exists or that there's sufficient evidence to prove that there's a God, more that is there anything after we die that continues on regardless of whether a God exists or not?
I don't know. That's kind of the question, right? We don't have any evidence, but to say that you know, definitively that nothing happens, that we're not, that there isn't some part of us that continues to go on. I mean, people still have memories of us. If we set records, the Guinness Book of World Records will have us in it. If we do something that is of historical significance, all those things are things that continue on after we die. If we have children, our genetics continue on after we die. Does that count? I don't think it does, but for some people it might. So I don't have any evidence, and I'm not willing to believe something without evidence, because beliefs inform actions and actions have consequences, right? If I believe that there is life after death, that life after death will be better than this life, then I'm justifying doing terrible things to myself, and that's not good. Those are bad actions, especially based without good evidence that that's even true. So this is kind of why I'm. I mean, if you want to believe it, that's fine. But it's, you know, what kind of actions does that lead you to take based on your belief that this is a simulation, right? I mean, for all we know, J. Mike is the only real person in this conversation, and we're all just AIs. Right? I mean, that could be the case.
It could be, but then Jay Mike would be extremely lonely.
Well, he's got a bunch of AIs to talk to.
Well, yeah, and the thing that Jim's pointing out, too, that I'll tackle on is that in terms of, like, explanatory virtue, it's on par with what, like, some guy, you know, shouting conspiracies to you says on the street. They're on an epistemic par. There's nothing that separates that conjecture from some other conjecture. I don't know about you. I don't want that. Like, I'm okay with saying I don't know, you know, and that's fine. That's much better to me than like taking conjecture that's on a par with someone else's conjecture where there's no like care for evidence, right? The whole rigorous process of going into science or whatever methodology someone wants to offer and rather sidestep that. That just kind of lends you up to being on par with theories that have no basis, right? And that's precisely what it is.
Okay.
Well, thanks for calling, Mark. We appreciate it. And we hope we answered some questions for you.
Thank you very much for your time.
All right.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Bye.
Well, I like it. I mean, seems extremely humble in the view compared to a lot of people I've talked with and in that sense. And so I think there's some good humility there from that perspective.
Yeah. All right. So next up is, I can hit the button, right? John in Missouri. Welcome to the show, John.
Jim and J-Mike, how you doing?
Good. Pretty good.
The reason so you I'm say calling you could... today is...
go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead.
The question proposed for the show caught my interest because it's something that I've struggled with for a long, long time, and it's the reasonableness of presupposing a God. Mm-hmm. And is it reasonable to do so? And I think that it is reasonable because without a source of information, the way we do look for information, the way we do look for answers, we ask, we look. And in the process of not finding answers, then we have to kind of infer what we're seeing and what's going on. In a modern day, in modern times, it's impossible to presuppose a God because there's so much information that we're raised around, that we're brought up in, that even when we're brought up within a specific religion, we don't get the opportunity to presuppose, but yet we still have the innate sensation that because we can sense things we can't feel, and we can infer things that we can't define, that we liken that to supernatural, we liken that to a creator or whatever. But
how are you using the word presuppose? Let me make sure we're talking about the same thing, because it sounds like you could be using it a couple of different ways. So when I say presuppose a God, what do you interpret that to mean?
I'm interpreting that to mean that based on whatever information that has brought me to that point where I'm asking myself that I'm assuming that it must be, without having to have any information to support it, or without having any real reason to believe it.
Right. So is believing things without a reason rational?
Rational is a different thing. Reasonable is what we're talking about. It's not rational to believe something that you can't investigate and try to pin something down, which is why that's the problem that I had with religion coming out of it. Because I wanted to believe. I was raised to believe, right? So then when I had questions that couldn't be asked, it just left me more confused. So I had to find my own answers. But that was based on the presupposition that what I was being told as a child was right.
Right. So is there anything I can't presuppose?
No, I don't know. There's nothing you can't presuppose.
Okay. So I'm not saying how you can consider this to be rational or reasonable to presuppose anything, much less a God. I mean, I could theoretically or hypothetically presuppose you're a cat in a box.
Yes, sir.
But so how is it rational or reasonable to presuppose anything, much less something as important as a God?
Yeah, rationality is something that you can do when you have better information and better tools. The reasonableness of looking for that in the first place, that guide, that thing that brings you to that idea, it's the same reason that we infer supernatural, because we can sense things we can't see. I can look at somebody, for instance, and I can get a good idea of how they're feeling, and to a degree kind of read where their thoughts are, but I don't have to be able to read their mind to do it.
Right. But we know how that actually, we have a number of hypotheses in psychology that actually explain that, most of them having to do with the way that you're brought up and being forced to pay hyper attention to how someone is feeling, because not doing so would cause you, would set them off and cause negative consequences. So we know how that happens, and we know that sociopaths in particular and some other folks are very, very good at reading emotions. We know that people who fake being telepaths and people who talk to the dead use that kind of body language reading extremely successfully well. So we have a natural explanation for it, for that kind of thing. But isn't it much more reasonable to say, to leave it at I don't know, rather than to come up with something you can't prove?
No, that's more rational to do that. That's what you do when you intellectually embed, look at the situation. But until you get to the point where you have the tools to do that with, right? Before you get to the point where you can say, okay, this doesn't make sense, let's investigate why this doesn't make sense. Okay, now I understand that this doesn't make sense to continue believing. But up to that point, the way the human psyche works, the way we're connected with each other, it's not unreasonable to make the presupposition. Rationality, information,
why isn't it more reasonable to simply to assume I don't know and leave it at that? Why is that not the better answer?
Because we as human beings, we seek answers. We want answers. And if we can't find immediate answers, we will infer our own.
By infer, do you mean make up?
No, we will interpret the information around us to the best of our ability to decipher the information that our brain is receiving from our eyes.
Are we able to infer everything correctly all the time?
No, that's the whole point. You can't infer anything correctly. Anything is going to be incorrect.
So if inferring anything is going to be incorrect, and I think Mike has some philosophical issues with inferring things, but it seems to me that you're better off just admitting that I can't make an inference to God, and if I have something that I can't explain, to simply say I don't know, than it is to attempt to explain
it. Yeah, you can't just like...
It took me a long time to reach that point.
Yeah, John, it's hard to real fast though, but it's hard to like when you invoke inferences and stuff like in logic and to be reasonable, right? You're going to have some basis of inference rules, right? That's what makes like a structure of an argument valid. And the issue is like, I can infer like, if the moon is in the sky, it's made of cream cheese, right? But like, clearly it doesn't. There's like no real implication there, right? That inference is just like a hot mess. And there's not much different from that. So like, you can claim an inference, but an inference in virtue of what? Just because you just put A and Z together?
The truth from an inference.
The problem is, John, you've opened up the door now for people, and this is kind of similar to the last call. You've opened up the door for anybody to rival your presupposition with any other presupposition. I mean, what if I was like, oh, I went out in the woods and smoked a doobie and naturalism is true, right? I had this revelation, I could even say, or I just had this presupposition. They're the same claim. They're both just entirely based on like a whim. There's nothing of substance there, right? I mean, and to say that I had an inference rule because like there's the natural world around me, therefore the natural world without any investigation or proper inference rules that are applied, then like, you know, it seems to be hot air from my perspective. I don't mean that disrespectfully. It seems to be the same thing. If I just blew hot air out my mouth, you know?
Yeah. And I agree, but this is why we have a society, because it's raised within a certain purview. All right. It's raised within a certain free view of what is and what is not. Getting away from that, even when you intellectually understand there's no way that what you're led to believe makes sense, you almost get to the point where you doubt yourself when you pull yourself away from it because of that existing setup that you have.
I take a position on experience. It's what I would say is it's incorrigible, right? It's what the idea is going to be is like, it's held very firmly. I can only have beliefs if I have experience, right? Like that's going to be kind of baked in.
Not
to
true.
Say it, it's entirely true.
You that's don't a, have to have a, experience a, to have belief.
Side point. The issue I'm going to say is like, look, if I can, if you have this idea, right, and you allow yourself to basically make the inference rule from no criterion at all, what stops me from doing the same thing? And then how could either of us be any closer to truth if we have basically, you know, cut our foot off right from the get-go? It just seems strange to me that you would want to defend that view, because you clearly wouldn't agree with my view that's opposite of yours using the same methodology, right?
But that's how I get to your view, because that's how I got to your view. It was when I realized even though it made sense to me individually and to most people who believe it, that is what is true, that it makes sense to them at that time, when you intellectually step aside from that and you realize the intellectual error of presupposing, then it's easier to start making that break away, because that's what I had to do.
So
it's not unreasonable.
It seems entirely unreasonable, because like this is how I view this in my head, and tell me if I'm wrong, okay? It seems like we have like an equation on the board, and it's like, what's the answer to life, okay? And we all don't know, and we're all in the classroom. We got Johnny presup, right? You're doing a presup thing. We got J Mike, I don't know, okay? So, and we got Sally Hindu, or we got whatever, right? We can go down the list. And all of them are giving different answers that's going to be correspondent to their world, okay? Now, you say, I presuppose that the answer is 12, okay? I go to you and I say, well, I tried to work it out. I don't know the answer. I think it might be 5. I don't really know, but I think it might be 5. Sally comes up to you and says, the answer is definitely 11, right? That's going to be correspondent to what they think their worldview is. A lot of these people might be looking at the world and going, I think it's true because of this prophecy, right? They're using an evidentialist approach. When I ask you what your answer is, or when you ask me what my answer is, and I tell you, I don't know, or Sally tells you 5, right? You've presupposed 12. You've already just plugged that in. There's nothing that will ever convince you that it's not 12 because you started there, right? Everything follows that you would never be convinced. And that's the problem. Is that not accurate?
You're wrong in your judgment. Once you realize that you're wrong in your judgment, then you can start intellectually trying to figure out what the real answer is.
How do you find out if you're wrong if prior you start with this thing that's entirely unjustified, right?
Exactly. And that's what happens. I mean, that's how somebody who's trying to unbuckle themselves from the fact that they still fear hell, even though they realize the Bible's pretty much crap. That's how they identify that. Because once you realize that this information is not the pathway to truth, then you can start breaking that down. Until that point, until you realize that what you've done is that natural thing that people do is interpret information for themselves. And without good information and without some way to interpret the information, you're going to make up what you think you see.
I got to stop you there, because you're saying interpret the information, but in virtue of what do you interpret the information upon, right? It's filtered through the presupposition.
Without good information.
Entirely, it's confirmation bias at like the highest level possible, right? Like you're just, anything that would follow through to like you assessing things is going to be in virtue of that premise that you initially bought into. And if you compare that to that presupposition, you're like, well, nothing would ever convince you, right? It couldn't possibly convince you. Okay. So then why hold a random arbitrary presup and defend that view as opposed to the, you know, ad infinitum that I could come up with right now?
I'm not suggesting that you maintain the presupposition. I'm saying that it's natural that a person does make a presupposition.
I'm challenging you, John. I'm specifically challenging you. I'm saying I don't buy into the idea that once you start with this, like, I'm okay with axiomatic positions where I have something that's not justified that I have to start with. But when you bake on something like God or something that's this, it's like an entity, it's ontology, it has its own work that we have to do, right? When you tack that thing on and it's entirely unjustified, everything else that you make in terms of your inferences and your investigation, it's already warped your thought process. You could never say you would correct yourself if you truly held to that presupposition as this like fundamental axiom that you hold, right? Nothing, because like you would have to make the move of just arbitrarily changing it the same way that you arbitrarily set it in the first place. Because what would it matter? Listen, what would it matter for investigation if you didn't bother for it in the first place to hold the view, right? I mean, just think about that.
Oh, I agree. But it's like Matt had talked about a lady one time that even when he broke it down and he made it perfectly clear that her beliefs didn't make any sense to follow, she chose to believe. She chose to rather believe than find out it was true. And that's what I'm talking about. If you don't recognize the intellectual flaw of what you're presupposing, you can't break out of it.
Right, that's irrational and unreasonable to do that.
That's what people do every day. That's what people do every
day. But that's not an answer to my question. That's not. It's unreasonable and it's irrational to do those two things, which was the question, is it rational to presuppose a God? And we're saying no. And it sounds like you're agreeing to us, even though all three of us will agree that the people do this anyway. Just because people do it doesn't make it rational or reasonable.
It's reasonable because that's what the human being will do in a vacuum. The human will infer based on the information that's around him. We don't have the luxury of being in a vacuum. There's no such thing as an informational vacuum anymore.
I think we're talking past each other. It's not because you're saying it's reasonable to say that people will do this. And I agree that there's a chain of reasonable to get us to people do this. But to actually say it's reasonable to do it is a completely different thing. And that's what we're talking about. I think we're talking past each other because you keep...
Well, in the spirit of that, I do agree that it's not reasonable by your definition, right? It is not reasonable intellectually. But until you get to the point where you understand your flaw, because that's what people experience, breaking away from a religion, breaking away from a mindset. Yeah. And once you identify that, the only point that I wanted to make is once you identify that what you are doing by... looking at the way you've been brought up to believe something without being able to say, okay, this is false. How do I demonstrate that this is false when I can't demonstrate it's true?
Right, but so presuppositionalists never do that. That's the problem with presuppositional apologetics. They don't ever do that. And because they start with that, the presupposition that there is a God, and that is their starting point, they don't get to it rationally. And that's what we're saying is unreasonable to do. Yeah. We're agreeing that people do it anyway because we have them call the show.
And that's why apologetics that works like it does, because it feasts on that. It needs that requirement to exist. That's why it makes a good starting point, because it's irrefutable at that level.
Not all apologists start with that presupposition.
But it is one that they start with. And that you mentioned that, and I was just echoing.
Yeah. So, some do. But yeah. Okay.
John, can I ask you one? Oh, sorry, Jim.
No, go ahead.
I just want to ask one last question and see if this might ring in a way. Because there's a problem that I have, especially, is like you start with the presupposition of God. Okay. From that like initial kind of premise, doesn't it seem like any set of observations that you have on the world, like there's not going to be some set of observations that you have that isn't correspondent to that presupposition that you have, right? It seems like anything that you look out in the world from that presupposition, it's going to fit, right? Just automatically, because you've already done
exactly
that. So there's no exactly. What follows is you have no way to adjudicate ones that would be out of accord with that entity, because any set of observations, you could make the mental gymnastics to make it work. People do that with the Bible in general, right? They do that with scripture.
Yep.
That's the problem. One of the big problems I have with a God belief, especially in the religious realm, is that any set, like anything that I observe in the world or in the text, I could make it work for that God, right? There's like, it almost seems like nothing
Absolutely.
Could prevent.
That's because that's the way the human brain is tuned. That's because we seek information. We seek to confirm information. It's part of how we deal with things until we realize we're not doing it intellectually. I agree with you 100%. Sure.
Yeah. So we were talking past each other. You were using the word reasonable for slightly different than both J. Mike and myself were. Because I think we were using it to be synonymous with rational, and you were using it as a process to get to a conclusion, I think.
And again, the only point that I wanted to use it to bring up was for somebody who's having that break point where they can't really separate one from the other. That once you realize that you're not looking at something in the right context with the right amount of information breakdown or investigative ability, that it's going to be hard to separate yourself from that, because I've experienced that myself.
So I guess for me, there seems to be an obfuscation there, because like I'm not concerned with the semantics of reasonable or rational. What I'm concerned with, is this a good method for truth? The answer is no, it's not.
No, it's like, not a good method for truth. And that was the question. I agree with you there.
Well, right. Then okay. I guess I don't really know why you would hold it then. This is all I would have to say.
Well, I'm not sure that he's holding the position that it's a good place to start from. He's agreeing with this is a bad place to start from, but that people do start from there.
Thank you, yes.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Maybe I'll have to go back and see what part I might have misheard you. That might be my bad as well.
All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate the call.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, it wasn't until I looked at the call screener's notes that he is an agnostic that I realized that we were probably talking past each other and tried to figure out how he's using the word reasonable.
And it's all that too, but it was like once then it was like, what, you know, why would you in general hold this, or why would anybody hold this or even advocate for it as a position to be rational towards truth? To me, is no, it's not. Whether you hold it or not, it's just across the board, I think it's a bad method.
Yeah, and he was agreeing to that. He was just using reasonable for slightly different than we were. So, but for those of you who'd like to support what we do here, there are some ways to support the Atheist Experience and the ACA. You can become a member for as little as 99 cents a month. Just click the join button below the video. This will give you access to special chat emojis, and you'll be immune from the messaging limits that non-members have, i.e. slow mode, for example, one message every 2 minutes. The Atheist Experience is just one of our shows that put on by the ACA. Make sure to check out our other shows as well. Secular Sexuality on Thursdays at 7. Truth Wanted airs live Fridays at 7. And then we have our Sunday shows, Talk Heathen at 1 p.m. Central, The Nonprofits right on before this show at 3 p.m. Central. And of course, you can support us on Patreon at tiny.cc/PatreonAXP. All right. And who do you want to take next, Jay Bayek?
I think your picks have been really good. So let's keep it going.
Do this one. B in Virginia, welcome to the show.
Hi. The basic layman's version of the question is, who gets to decide what a group is called? I just make up my own name for a group. I know someone who thinks that's a perfectly reasonable thing for him to do.
Yeah, I don't see why it wouldn't be.
Oh, that's not what I was expecting.
Well, who do you think should name a group? I mean, if it's not the members of the group, that's what I'm saying. The members of the group get to.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Yeah, he's not only outside the group, he's vehemently opposed to the group. I'm talking about the LGBT community. He refuses to say that. So he comes up with his own names and says, well, they can't possibly offend people because I'm making up the name and I don't want it to be offensive. And people in the LGBT community are telling him, yeah, that is offensive. Use our actual name. And it's his.
Yeah, he is being offensive. He's being a dickhead. Absolutely. He is.
Yeah. I don't know how hard it is. Like I really question the psyche of people in these conversations, and I've had them in personal relationships, and I live in the South. So I'm just saying from my perspective, it seems to be a pretty heavy shift on one side. And so you run into, I overhear these conversations. And so, yeah, to me, there's a lot that speaks to the person's psyche. I don't really fully get it. I've never been able to understand that. I'm not going to conform to what somebody wants to be called, or just out of direct disrespect. Like, you couldn't cut it any other way, right? You know?
Yeah, it's a form of erasing the person's identity. It's just like, I have a friend of mine who started off calling me Jimbo, and I said, I don't appreciate that. He did it again, and I started calling him JJ, and he didn't like that. And so, he wasn't being offensive about it. The last guy he knew was Jim was Jimbo, but I had to carry him with that because I don't like being called Jimbo. I like Jim. Yeah. If I didn't, I wouldn't use the name. So he's being unempathetic to the group. He's being he's trying to erase them by giving them a name that he prefers and nobody else cares to use. And I don't know that I would call someone trying to erase an entire group of people a friend personally. It wouldn't make my list, but it just seems like he's trying to be as offensive as possible by not using the correct name.
Yeah, you mentioned something about identity. It's a whole other topic, but he just flat out rejects that as a concept, and we don't understand it, and we've just let him live it. But yeah, if I tried to make that argument, his retort would probably be, there's no such thing as your identity.
And, well, sir, calling him Snuffy Poopy Head and telling him you don't mean to be offensive.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I decided to tell him that my intention was to call every member of his religion cat swingers.
There you go.
Made up that phrase. it might possibly offend him, and shock and awe, it offends him. So,
yeah, I mean, like, we could go around calling Christians, like, be like, you know, I could go to people that I know that believe that, you know, that God flooded the earth, and I could be like, hey, guy that believes in, worships a baby killer, right? I just call him a Christian, right? But, you know, if, you know, maybe put insight. If somebody I know had believed that and they do that, yeah, like, honestly, it's like, you don't want to necessarily fight the fire with the fire, but it's like, you know, if you find something as simple as, like, say you call them a nickname and they get mad about that, you can make the point pretty clear to them on such a low level to such a reasonable level where it actually affects people. Because, you know, if he had a connotation with the name when you called him and it was something like really traumatic in his life, there would just be no argument to be had. I mean, it's just, there would be you would have the connection of why, or at least some empathy towards why that would bother somebody.
Yeah. I mean, I will admit, since he really likes cats, it was a dick move. It was meant to vaguely allude to animal abuse. But hey, if he can make up his name, I can make up my name.
Turnabout is definitely fair play.
Your input.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. And so, believe it or not, we have a channel that houses all of our shows on the ACA and audio podcast form. You can visit tiny.cc/AENpodcasts. There you can listen to all the latest shows from the Atheist Experience, Talk Heathen, Truth Wanted, Secular Sexuality, and the Nonprofits, and all the others, all on one channel. We have 3 Facebook groups that are run by fans for fans that you can interact with. The first is the Atheist Experience fan group that you can get to at tiny.cc/FBAXP. And then there's also the Atheist Experience private fan group where you can interact with others without having those interactions appear on your public feed at tiny.cc/FBAXPPR. We also have a new group, the Atheist Experience fan group, Atheist versus Theist Debates, where you can try out some of your arguments on theists and atheists alike. You can find that at tiny.cc/AXP fan debates. And also, you know, we've got some really, really important people that we cannot do this show without. And those are the folks in the crew who need to be shouted out because, quite frankly, it is really wonderful to be able to walk up into this show and simply start talking to people and not have to deal with any of the technical difficulties that come in with a show. If you watch anybody else's show, even other hosts on this show, and Jay Mike's over there nodding because he does a show all by himself. But the crew, can we get the crew up? There we go.
Ooh,
these folks. Yeah. And of course, the crew cat. You know, we literally cannot do this show. Ask anybody who does a show on their own just how important it is to have that crew behind us. We sound as good as we do and we look as good as we do because of those folks. Who do we want to talk next? What the heck? Kevin in Washington wants to make some sort of point between slavery and eating animals.
From my program, I'm used to hearing New York after that. But
hi, guys. Thanks for having me. Big fan of the show. I'm out walking my dog right now. Hope you guys are having a great Sunday. I've just been thinking a lot about, and I'm a big fan of you guys and Matt Dillahunty. I was hoping to chat with him a little bit today because I know he's big on the slavery stuff. Excuse me. But I am I'm a carnivore. I love to eat meat, but I think there's a balance in nature that needs to be had. And I think presupposing a God, I'm going to try to make this fit into today's subject. Presupposing a God creates an arrogance in man that makes humans think that everything's here for us and we can treat it any way we want, which creates a very cruel atmosphere for other species. Even to this day, creating like a new age slavery from species to species, not human to human. So that was kind of my one point I was thinking about and wanted to chat about today.
Right. But neither J-Mag nor myself are presuppositionalists, much less theists. So how does that fit in with us in particular and other atheists?
I guess it fits in. I am an atheist myself too. I believe theism is a huge producer of arrogance. I guess I'm not trying to oppose you guys at all. I'm just trying to throw my two cents in, where I think theism creates a lot of harm, but not human to human, just more human to other species.
Okay. Theism does cause quite a bit of harm, and I'm more concerned with the human to human stuff right now, because like here in Texas, we have a governor and a Texas state attorney general who think it's okay to tear apart families because kids are trying to be who they are, and he doesn't think that that's right. So I'm not sure, you know, we've got some pretty serious problems going on throughout the country at the moment. So, okay, based on theism, yep. But...
Oh, you're right, and a lot of wars are in history are based on religion and stuff. And we got a war going on right now in the, it seems like, between Russia and Ukraine. So yeah, it's not a top topic here. It's not something we should be solely concerned about. But as a spinoff argument of slavery, it's just something I thought was somewhat important enough to talk about once in a while.
Well, I don't see how slavery is analogous to eating animals.
Not eating animals. The way they're farmed in modern day, in cages, in pens, treated like crap. I mean, if we were to, and don't get me wrong, I'm a carnivore, but if we were to farm animals more peacefully in harmony with nature, instead of killing, you know, 10 million at a time in cages, maybe the animals would have a little bit of a better life like we're trying to have. So it's not necessarily eating or farming. It's more modern day farming.
I mean, are you just saying like a restriction of freedom? Because I mean, you could draw analogous properties like really wherever you want, depending on which one. But it's like we're gonna agree up to a certain extent, right? Because it's just not categorically the same to me. So if you're just talking about restriction of freedom or something, like I can get on board. I think that the factory farming thing's horrible. I would love to see. I'm a guy that would eat lab grown meat, so call me weird. I don't know. Like I want to eat meat, but I would love to do it in a way that doesn't affect people. It's not the world we live in, and I'm actually currently shopping vegan, so I've been trying to kind of do the fellow Dan, you know, take Dan's kind of steps, but I have not been good at it. And in fact, I was eating a block of cheese while I was telling somebody how good I was doing on my vegan diet, and then I looked down eating Cracker Barrel cheese and was like, "Yeah, this is I think it was somebody in the ACA that I was talking to. Actually, now that I think about it, so.
And I do the same thing. I try to be as good as I can, and like I said, I want to talk about like the indigenous Indians that lived in harmony with the land and respected animals and let animals have a great life before they ate them. And here we are.
Yeah. And they didn't have anywhere near the population that we do, right? That's kind of the problem, is we have a large population. And so in order to feed that population, we have to do things that maybe we'd rather not do. But I mean, that's a whole conversation for something else. And not really. Yeah. So anyway, thanks for calling, Kevin. Appreciate it. You have a good evening.
Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
See ya.
All right. So you can get Atheist Experience merchandise by visiting tiny.cc/merchaca. You can get t-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, stickers, and a whole lot more. And right below the chat, you'll notice there's a donate now box. Donations made there mean that the ACA will get 100% of the proceeds. YouTube doesn't take a cut, and that is the best way to support us. If you'd like to continue the discussion after the show, join us on the ACD, the Atheist Community of Discord, the fan-run Discord server at tiny.cc/ACD Discord. And finally, want to send I already did that one. We did the thank you to the crew, but you know what, let's do it again, because quite frankly I can't really thank them enough, because these guys, I mean, I really can't tell you, we've got the call screeners, we got the people doing the producing, doing the sound, all those folks. we cannot do the show without them. And we also have a promo of the stuff that is going on around the ACA.
I mean, there is nothing about anything else that we have done as a state in terms of the way we finance things, in terms of the way we legislate, it would make you think that we give a flying about taking care of kids broadly.
Talking about Christianity in terms of like, well, I can pick through this and try to find the nicest things about it. The way we say it where I come from is you pick through the turd to try to find a bit of corn.
What if we could take some fetal cell tissue and mix it in water and then create a big circle around the nation's capital And that way, no Christian nationalist can cross that line and get near the Capitol because they'd have to cross a barrier of fetal tissue.
So the experts in multiple fields of medicine, we've got the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Family Physicians. Similarly, the organizations for adolescent and child psychiatry and for general psychiatry, they are all have been saying this for a while, that the best, most up-to-date standard of care for trans kids is to support their transition.
Well, I have experience with the demons, with the spirit.
Okay. How do you demonstrate to me what those laws are? How can I tell the difference between whether or not what you say is true or whether you're just making it up?
All right. So some good stuff going on around the ACA shows today. All right. We ready for the next one?
Ready.
All right. Let's take Victor in Texas. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi, can you
hear
me?
Victor.
I'm sorry,
Sure can.
It's natural. It's okay.
Can we take my phone off speaker? So, basically, I've told the screener I count myself as barely a theist. I feel like my theism holds on to just one issue, one matter.
Yeah, sure.
And maybe you guys will be able to get me off that. I was hoping to get to Matt, but of course I know about J. Mike and Jim. So see if.
Well, unfortunately, we are not Matt. I have a little too much, little too much hair, but you know.
Yeah, so do I.
Yes. So yeah, my theism is I don't count myself as a Christian. I don't care for the Bible. I certainly don't consider it to be the word of God. But there's just one point. I accept the idea that it's possible that the universe could come into being without having an intelligent creator. And I think there's hordes of indications that the universe is not intelligently designed. So I don't get to that, but I think that our sense of morality is something I can't quite explain. I'm familiar with Matt's concept of, the word's blanking out on me, well-being, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, all of us get along better if we behave nicely to one another, and, you know, that we're good to one another, it all comes out best for the rest of us. And I agree with that. I think it even applies, you know, even though a lot of people don't even follow that.
Well, Victor, let me ask you real quick. What's specifically the moral part of it that's got you hung up? And then are you like just a general theist or a Christian or like a Muslim?
No, I'm not. I don't count myself as a Christian.
It helps for clarification in terms of when we talk about what's moral.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, there'd be a different type of conversation.
Caring for others. The key thing about morality is the idea of caring for others. And sure, so, I understand that within a community, we can all care for one another. And that makes sense. And you don't need to have a God concept for that.
But we see in the natural world, especially among social species, we see almost every element that we would want to consider to be moral. There are experiments that have been done. And if you Google rats and morality, you should get to these experiments where they have shown that rats will risk their own lives to save other rats, rats they've never met and rats they will not be rewarded for saving. That if a rat realizes that by pushing a button it normally gets him food, it also injures another rat, they will stop doing that. And that's just rats. We've seen in the wild ravens, scientists were trying to track, pretty sure it was ravens, trying to track raven movement. And so they figured out how to put this little vest on them that had a GPS device that was really low power that they could use. And ravens or crows, I forget which, but they started taking the little packs off them. And it wasn't hurting the birds. It wasn't, it didn't impede their flight. It didn't have any impact on the bird at all. And yet they quite selflessly actually just took the ones that didn't have the pack on them, took the pack off of the others. So we see this kind of stuff, and we see almost, like I said, every element of morality in social species, because that helps us survive as a species.
Yes. To a certain extent, you did mention that these rats or some of these animals will act altruistically for other animals, even if they don't get a benefit in return, which to my mind points a little more towards the idea that there's something else. But let me just go to the final point.
Let me give you one more example of, sure. And this is kind of like the most rudimentary form of moral action you can take, and that is species A starts cooperating with species B and realizes that species B is cheating, and so stops cooperating. That is kind of, I think, minimalistic moral type of behavior. And we see that in bacteria and other single-celled organisms, molds and bacteria. And we see that happening there. So it seems to be pretty basic that cooperation and wanting to cooperate to survive better leads to some fairly complicated algorithms, complicated behaviors in even simple organisms. So I'm not sure, so it's pretty basic. And that's what it really points to, is we're all just trying to survive.
And Victor, I want to let you said you had a last point before I chime in. I want to hear what your last point is to it, so that way I don't
I'm still not sure, because you're talking about cooperation and things like that.
I'm going to take it from a different angle. So, in terms of that, so like, I'll try to give a different side of it, but yeah, I am curious on like that last bit that you had.
Well, let me just say it real quick. I think all of the ideas of cooperation and everything, and the idea that it's well-being and it's not divine command, I totally agree with that. What I don't see is how all of this cooperation and, you know, it all is good for me comes to why I care about sea turtles choking on plastic.
Okay, sweet. So I am not a moral realist, so I'll just say that up front. But I act in what I call to be moral actions, or at least from my position as a subjectivist. The way that I look at morality in this case, we have overlapping desires, right? We know what it's like. Like, if I ran into some building and like it was like falling down and there's a child in there and I go save it, when you ask me like what the reasons were, like it'd be weird to be like, I recognize some mind independent duty or something like that, right? Which is typically what people mean by objective morality. It would also be kind of strange to be like, you know, God told me, or I thought that's what God would want. No, what it really reduces down to is the fact that you know what it's like to be a child. You know what it would be like to experience not having the strength to get out of there, not having the critical thinking skills. All that stuff's packed in to your, and kind of what, you know, from my position, I kind of take a similar from the minimalistic approach. We can kind of see how this develops within species. The reason why I don't think there's like objective morality is because we can easily see that we engage in what we call moral action. It's all going to be tethered to like our desires and what we ultimately want, but we overlap a lot in a lot of cases because we have phenomenal experiences. We experience what it's like to feel something hot. We feel what it's like to feel pain and suffering. And we typically don't want to keep continuously experience those things. So for me, it's like really trivial for the whole reason of why I want to save a sea turtle or something. That's because that was me, I would want that to happen for me. For me, it's that easy. And someone could go, well, why ought I do what something would want to do for me? And that's a whole separate moral argument in like the domain of meta ethics that you can have. But all I care is that if I recognize that that's what I have, like, you know, absent, it doesn't seem that a naturalistic explanation of it is gonna fail. It seems like so far it's doing a really good job, as opposed to invoking some supernatural theist, which, sorry to go on a long tangent, but I don't think you can ground morality in a deity anyway, because it's mind dependent, right? It would be like me telling you that my dependent morality is objective and you should listen to me. It's just arbitrary that it comes from God with this set of properties versus, say, you believed in a God that had a different set of properties, right? It's just going to stem from this entirely arbitrary basis to call it then objective, as opposed to what it is, which is subjective.
Well, let me explain to a certain extent. My, as I told you, I don't buy into, I don't believe you get morals from your religion or Christianity, and I don't subscribe to divine command theory. I believe my let's say hypothesis is that however God created all of us and all the other animals, including the sea turtles, because we are God's creation, God wants us to be good to one another and instills that sense in us. That was my idea.
Sure, but like, look, presumably, like, you would think God sets out a purpose, right? Like, right, there's a purpose for these things, right?
Maybe so, but I also don't believe in an omnipotent God either.
Well, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying, like, presumably there would be some intrinsic purpose, right? That now you have the deity, right?
Right. Well, the deity.
Well, then think about it. And this is something that a friend of mine mentioned that I think is really worth mentioning. If there's like a purpose, right, and you're wanting to go from the God perspective, it's going to be the case that the evil action should be done if everything had a purpose. So it's going to be really vacuous what you mean by good and evil. If it's just the case that, like, if everything in the theist domain, and this is just if you hold to the God giving purpose or a plan to things, then all the things that shouldn't happen, we should actually do because it's for a purpose. So, like, the whole concept of evil is just vacuous from my perspective, right? It's just going to be part of the purpose.
I don't really go according to the concept of evil. I go by the concept of well-being.
Well, so, but you're saying that God wants us to be well-being, that is to have well-being, that is divine command theory. You're saying it's because God told us so, which is divine command theory, and you're saying that is good. And so, well, I mean, yeah, if the ultimate source of morality is God, then it is divine command theory, right?
Well, no, because I don't believe in an omnipotent God. I believe that God,
I'm not saying he's omnipotent,
within limits.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's omnipotent.
There's a greater indifferent totality of reality outside of God. God only operates within that, is my concept.
Right, I'm not saying God is omnipotent. I'm saying that if you say that the reason that God wants us to be moral, and by moral you mean to support well-being, then you're saying it comes from God, which is the definition, if I'm not too incorrect, the definition of divine command theory.
Yeah, I mean,
my idea of divine command theory is that what is good is what God says so.
Well, sure, but God says so, or God designs it. Like, dude, yeah.
God says that men shouldn't have sex with men, you know, even regardless.
Yeah, but it's going to be, it's going to be, and I think Jim is trying to get to this point, is that, like, it's not going to matter if it's in virtue of the command or in virtue of, like, the nature or properties, right? It's going to be arbitrary and it's going to be subjective. And one of the worst, like, at least the issue for me, I guess we could just paint it in this question, is it good in virtue of the properties that God has or not, right? If it's not, then it's good, like, independently, right? But then it's just good independently. You don't need the God, and you don't need the God. So, like, the whole hang up that you have for the moral argument getting you to the existence of God, if it's just independent of God, you don't need the God. You have it's something that's sovereign over God. You wouldn't require that. You just have kind of like this, like, hangnail for no reason that you need to clip off, right? Like, there's no reason for it to be there. If you're saying it's good in virtue, because there's only two ways to look at this, and I think this is the best kind of way to pan what Jim and I were saying, but mold it here now. That if you're saying it's good in virtue of the properties God has, and we'll drop the commands, just the way God is, right? Then it's gonna be subjective, because it could be any other set of properties, and then whatever that God's properties are determines what the good is. Clearly vacuous, clearly arbitrary. Now, if you say no, which is a true dichotomy, it's not good in virtue of the properties, right? Then presumably it's going to be independent of God. And if that's the case, you don't need God. So it just seems like in either case, it's not a good option.
I still don't see, I still have a hard time seeing that we should care for something as distant as sea turtles.
Go ahead.
My actual concern stems from the idea that, you know, that there are people who will say they are sea turtles, why should we care? And mm-hmm. then there are also people who will say they're Afghans, why should we care?
Right. And so, yeah, and here's kind of my response to that.
Seems like it's explained by the brain almost.
Yeah, because we're very tribalistic. We care more about our tribe, however we identify with that tribe, right? And this explains politics, this explains in-group, out-group, you know, all these things come together. But once you realize that your tribe is not your city and your tribe is not your immediate family and friends, and that your tribe is not your state or your country, but your tribe is every human on the planet, it begins to change how you look at things. Because we're all intimately tied together. You can look at the war in Ukraine right now and look at the ripple effects that's happening and could have as we move forward. We're no longer separated by months of travel. We're separated by hours and days at most. And so we care about what happens in Afghanistan. We care about what happens in Ukraine because that could also happen to us. There's nothing stopping Putin from rolling through the rest of the NATO countries and eventually getting here. And so we want to stop that kind of thing as early as possible. When it comes to things like sea turtles and the ecosystems, then again, looking at it from all humans, every time we cause a species to die out before their time, we cause direct harm. And eventually, we're going to fish out the oceans. And eventually, we're going to completely deplete all of our ability to grow anything. And also destroy the oceans through way too much fertilizer going downstream like we've got in the Gulf right now. So the reason we should care is because that will affect us. You don't want gas prices going to $5 an hour or to $5 a gallon. Don't support war.
Actually, I do want gas prices to go up so people will stop using gas. But
that's a whole different conversation, right? But even with that, right. I mean, is that the most moral thing we could do? Because the counter argument to that is the people it's going to hurt the most are the people who can least afford gas, who are barely affording gas to get to work. Right?
I mean, part of my idea, you know, that, you know, or yeah. at least, you know, but, you know, that's getting off the topic of my. Well, I think you're actually getting some good points there as to why actual morality matters, which might be finally getting me there. I'm still a little uncertain to the idea that our.
Right. I mean, just do you think it reduces to your experience? Well, here, Victor, do you think if you were to ask, like, does it reduce to your experience or not?
Reduce to my experience.
Yeah, when you take like a moral claim and you look and you go, wow, I think murder is wrong. Does that not ultimately reduce down to your experience of the world?
Well, I guess that if murder wasn't wrong, someone could kill me. Yeah, I guess
you're. Yeah, right. And so like
my experience, correct.
Yeah, and so like it's like I don't. Like, even if that's off, like, in terms of, hey, you know, that's deeper in our understanding about morality or there's objective morality and it's some natural property in the world or something, I just still don't see the leap, you know, because, like, I can at least reduce it down to my experience why I think X is wrong. It's going to ultimately just reduce to desires, things that I have. And, you know, I can talk to Jim and a lot of other people. And I think, like, you know, 99 out of the 100 are going to be like, yeah, we probably shouldn't, you know, go stab that person with the fork or something. Right. And that's a lot of it's going to be based on your experience. It's not going to say that it's objectively true, but it's just going to say you discover some values pretty quickly once, you know, you're stabbed with a fork. Yeah, I wouldn't take the full on approach that it's objective in that case, but
there are still a whole lot of people out there that will say, you know, we shouldn't care about, you know, what happens to all these other animals and even, you know, like I said, distant people. And I personally, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that would be explained by the brain. I mean, like some people have an inability to like have empathy, right? And mm-hmm. some people are psychopaths. There are people that will do an action and then not have any like remorse for it, even though maybe they find God later or something, and then they can acknowledge it was a wrong action, right? There are people like that.
Right, and that actually leads more to...
I think it gets to just failing.
Yeah, but that's more what we'd expect to see if morals were a natural phenomena of surviving, We would not expect to see that if they were written into our hearts by some God. Yeah. We would not expect to see psychopaths. We would not expect to see, we'd expect everybody to have the same set of morals, and that is not what we see in reality, right?
Yeah. Well, again, I don't know why God's law would be tripped up by matter, you know?
Right.
Like I said, I do not believe in the omnipotent God. I believe that God's power is so diffuse as to only affect, right. You know, still whatever the case, only a small portion of humanity are psychopaths. But you also don't have to be a psychopath to say they're only sea turtles. We shouldn't care. So because I still want to be getting all my plastic, and I don't want to have to recycle. So
I think you make a good decision.
We all have our sense of what we should do, and we all fail at it anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a good point. Yeah. I know what I, you know, should or ought to do, but that was actually going to bring up the fact that, like, I think the should and the oughts is the hot button in morality and meta ethics. And the distinction is going to be like, if I say I ought or I should do something, like, you know, ultimately something, like, why do you think that's wrong? Like, you know, because I think it's wrong because I know what it's like to experience. That's a much better reason to me, you know, to extend that out, you know, that I can swing my fist knowing that it's going to hit Jim in the face potentially, and he's not going to like that. And then I go, well, I wouldn't like that either. Seems like a way better explanation than, like, yeah, it was written on our hearts by a God that has some set of properties that could be different, or the fact that if it was written by the God, it could just deceive you. It would have the ability to deceive you and think every moral proposition that you think is true is actually just false, and it's just wanted to mess with people, right? Like, it adds all these what ifs that could happen because you've already introduced magic to it, right? So once magic's introduced, we can now sprinkle magic, like, everywhere, you know?
Okay. I guess you guys have some good points. I'm still having a little bit of a hard time because I know that so many people would argue with me about we should care about all of these things. And
I think you should, but I can't tell you should objectively.
They do it. Yeah, sure. So, all right. Well, I guess that's where we are. You might have pushed me a little further out of theism. I'm not sure. I think I might still have a little bit of cling there. But thank you for taking my call.
All right,
yeah.
Thanks.
Good day.
Bye.
All right. Goodbye.
Yeah, one of, like, the most important things, like, when I talk to people and they're like, yeah, I still got to think about that. Like, the one thing I always want to put at the end is, like, don't take my word for it. You know, me and Jim's word for it. Like, go keep doing your own. Because, like that, what would a con man or someone, you know, not do that, right? Like, who wants you to really buy into it for some motive, right? It's like, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, please keep doing your own research. Don't just stop there, you know, even if you were just bought into it hook, line, and sinker, you know.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's really it really important that you figure out for yourself where that's coming from and where and look at everything yourself as much as you can. There's some things like quantum physics. Unless you're really interested in quantum physics, you should probably trust the scientists on that one. But on moral topics and what is moral and whether or not what you're willing to do and what you're not willing to do should definitely come from you and not from some badly written fantasy book.
Yeah.
Or 66 of them.
Yeah.
All right. Let us go to, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Davian in Texas. Did I get your name correct?
Davian.
Davian. Davian. Okay.
Yes.
Welcome to the show, Davian.
Right on. How y'all doing? Man, this is
just
crazy.
How
you doing? I'm calling in. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Welcome to the show. And so it says here, it can't be reasonable to not presuppose a God.
Yes, sir. That's
so many negatives.
Okay. So why is it reasonable to presuppose a God?
Oh, man. Where would I start, man? Okay. I mean, I was an atheist at one point, you know. Mm-hmm. I haven't even been to the show for a while now, you know, but coming out of atheism, I used to watch Matt and, mm-hmm. chasing all of them for a very long time. But even when I was an atheist, I always, and I hope that, you know, nobody takes this as an insult or anything, but to me, I always, like, would say to myself, I'm still smart enough to, like, presuppose some type of deism. You know what I mean? Some type of vague deism, you know? Like,
okay.
I just don't
get what?
How. Yeah, I just,
I said, okay. You presuppose deism.
I don't get how. Yeah, for sure. Like, I don't get how anybody doesn't, you know. So when you say presuppose a God, you know, that doesn't, you know, necessarily mean Christianity, although I am a Christian. And, you know, I don't,
right.
it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, Christians or Muslims or, heck, even Hindus, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't, you know, it's not.
You said something interesting. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Jim.
No, go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I was just saying, you said something interesting that, like, I don't know how anybody couldn't presuppose deism. I don't.
Yeah.
I think I'd ask you, like, do you think it's, like, a good method to be under the judgment that we can conceive of things? And until then, it's conceptual. And then until you add something like, you know, a prediction or something in the future that we could expect to see, right, that it's just conception and only conception, right? Does that make sense, that you would need some further thing to distinguish conception from reality? Because that's the reason why I don't presuppose God or believe in a God. There's no reason to, right?
I'm following you to an extent, but I'm not all the way following you. Well, maybe it could help if I said why I did. Like, just, and I know, I mean, you guys.
Sure, but the idea real quick is just that we can all make things up in our head, and you need some methodology to distinguish that being reflective of the reality that we live. And so the reason why I don't presuppose God or believe in a God is because it's precisely just that, conceptual without the methodology that would be required for me to be reasonable to believe it.
Well, I would think my response to that is I would think you would have a good, strong argument there if I, you know, said the God of the wind is my God or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, stuff like that, yeah, anybody could just make up anything. But I'm talking about something just like your human body alone, like just the complexity of your human body and how well everything works together. I mean, you know, I once heard Matt kind of shred the argument just talking about the human eye and just kind of reducing it like it was nothing, like it's not, you know, just magnificent how we're made, just us, period. You know what I mean? The fact that a man and woman can create life, like to think.
Sure. So we have two things. One, we have two things. One, we could agree, right, that this is a beautiful experience and all that. And then we could go, the conclusion of that is it's natural. I don't see a contradiction in that. And then we can conclude that it's because of God. I don't see a contradiction in that. But I can see the world around me, and I don't see a God or a deist. So, right, like, wouldn't you need the extra thing to be reasonable, or at least some kind of evidence pointing to it, right? Because, like, I have evidence for the natural world. I have evidence of seeing a process of the brain develop, and kind of what Jim said prior. We have, like, you can look at this almost on minimalistic levels of different species and see kind of gradual processes within intermediate species. So it seems to fit the data in one sense, but the other sense seems to have precisely the thing that you're wanting to get to is, like, completely absent from the picture and even just the evidence part.
Sure. But is it absent, or is it that we're trying to perceive it with our five senses? Well, you know, what, touch, taste, smell, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, is it absent, or is there another way that we can figure this thing out that we, like, don't want to embrace because we don't accept the methodology? What if there is a spiritual way that we can figure these things out?
So the problem with that is that science will accept any methodology that consistently returns the same result. So if you put the same inputs into it, you'll get the same outputs. So if you want to say there's another methodology for examining the supernatural or the spiritual, whatever you want to call it, then what we need is a reliable way to test it and a reliable methodology to do so. And we don't have that methodology. Prayer does not work at any better rate than the rate of chance every time it's tested. So we don't see prayer working. Somebody, you know, we have had multiple people. That is fair. In a double-blind test, people praying for a medical recovery had no better effect on the outcome than random chance. How is that prayer working?
I understand that, like, method, but I want to say it's not fair because you're trying to do something spiritual and you don't know the spiritual position of those people. You don't know the faith of those people.
I'm not the one who people's lives. Right. But see, the problem that I have is that it's not me coming up with this. I'm saying you or any other spiritual person or proponent of the supernatural needs to come up with this methodology. You're right. I don't know. Just like I don't know how to create an experiment for quantum physics. I don't know how to do that. But the people who do need to do that, and they've failed when they've tried it.
Yeah, and real quick, like, just to tack on what Jim's saying, because I, on Truth Wanted, I made this exact same point, and I just enjoy this analogy. But, like, we're not saying that you couldn't come up with some methodology. And I'm sympathetic to, like, because I like philosophy, so there's lots of things that I'm very open to that I don't think a lot of people would expect on the surface level. And so I'm completely open to, like, you having this methodology. But the way I relate this is, like, we're both in a lot. We're making our, like, we're constructing our buildings, okay? And we're using a tool like a hammer that we know is repeated. It's successful. I can build foundations. I can build cities with it. And I look over at you and, like, or maybe not you, but the person, you know, proposing this idea, and they're coming up to us and saying, well, don't you know you could use something else other than the hammer? And I'm going, sweet, what is the other tool, right? And I look over at your lot, there's nothing being built. Mm-hmm. I ask you, like, hey, can you take me to Home Depot and show me what aisle the tool's in? And we can't even do that. I can't even, like, put it to my tongue and know if it has, like, a metallic taste, right? I have nothing of substance to know what this other tool looks like, yet I'm expected to listen to it, or, you know, without evidence, which is strange, or without a demonstration of the methodology. And then further, the people that say this, they have to get on our city infrastructure that we built with the hammer and use that in order to even profess their issues with that method in the first place. And it's like, I'm okay with it, but, like, why are we doing this to a clearly successful method?
I want to know what you built, though. Like, I love the argument, but I gotta, in order for it to make complete
science of medicine, like, look at this way, faith and prayer did not get my grandma her medication at 3 at the time that she needs to take it, right? It didn't get me on AXP by praying for, like, a camera crew to pop up and, like, you know, a webcam. Well, I guess I could say Greg, you know, is God in some way. So I think that's not the best analogy to use. But look, from what we're going through now with vaccines, like, if you had every Christian in the world pray for some, like, anything at all, right, for a decline in COVID, right, you would not get vaccines out of that process, right? That's the cities that I'm talking about. And what I'm talking about is people they'll get on the rooftops of our structure and shout, you know, all day long that there's some other methodology we need to listen to, or that faith would work better, or that prayer would work better. Yeah. And I say, that sounds like a bunch of bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I did too at one point. I did too. But I mean, I get what you're saying. That's why I was asking, okay, like, give me a good example by the building here, and we're building this on the left, but then you compared it to medicine. So I get what you're trying to say. Like, okay, we would take, a Christian or a believer or something would take credit for something science does, like medicine, you know, which can actually heal somebody or, you know, make the sick unsick. And you're saying we can't prove that a prayer can do the same thing.
But what does spirituality do for
you? No, we're always left
with
the how.
Yeah. What does spirituality or prayer do for you? Or what does spirituality do for you? What is its mechanism for working? How do you get it to work?
How do you get it to work? You know, you guys make some good arguments here, but the thing is, it's hard to tell an atheist, even when I was one, it's hard to tell them that, you know, you have to look at things with, like, a certain type of spiritual insight. You have to have a certain spiritual insight to even look at certain things, to diagnose certain issues. How do you do that? Let me ask you this. Do you think all around the world, like people, even people that are Satanists, people that believe in, you know, just other stuff, period. Do you think, like, this, like, spiritual type of experience that people have, you know, have reported to have all around the world throughout the, you know, the history of mankind, do you think they're just all delusional and just want this to be true? Like I said, I wasn't, you know, I've listened to...
I don't think they're delusional. I don't think they're delusional. Yeah. I would like to know what their experience is, and I would like to know what you mean by spiritual, because one of the things we haven't talked about is what you mean by that, and mostly because every time I try and have this conversation about spiritual, I don't know about J. Mike, but nobody can define it, right? And so someone can say they had a spiritual experience. Two people can say they had a spiritual experience, and neither one of them agree what that experience was. So, but if we just want to talk in general, people having spiritual experiences, so far, the data that I have tells me that there is a natural explanation for that and not a spiritual one.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're looking at the screen, but really long hair, so probably wouldn't be off the wall to say I used to consider myself spiritual. I guarantee you we didn't mean the same things by it, because the New Age spiritualism compared to what I kind of had in my own personal beliefs was nowhere the same. Probably not even the same, you know, presumably for you to them as well, or across to me. I believed in that. I no longer do. Mm-hmm. And I've applied as much critical thinking as I possibly can. And I still can't tell you what the fuck I really believed in. It was just like feelings that I put in a box of like, I'll explain it here because, you know, it was having a lack of critical thinking. And I noticed it when I started buying into conspiracy theories, or when I couldn't defend globe Earth and was like, well, crap, now I think the Earth is flat. And I went and, you know, that was, I think, the first time I applied some critical thinking, and it started for me, right? So right. My issue is like, when you buy into the spiritual thing, if you're like me at all, then you're susceptible to delusion. Like, I would consider myself delusional at that time. I won't say that's the case for everybody else, but you're susceptible to being delusional. And because you've allowed this faulty way of reasoning into your method of reasoning, then it can creep up at any time and be used as some form of justification when in fact it never was. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, my bad. Go ahead. Finish.
I was finished. I was finished. You're good.
Okay. Well, the thing is, I thought that way too, even about other people, you know. I mean, I'm not saying by no means that it's just easy to believe in what you can't see. But I do think, as I'm going to put myself in my atheist shoes, like in that mindset, when I did think like that, when I studied Christopher Hitchens, when I studied Sam Harris, when I studied Matt, when I studied all of these guys, right? I do think what you're saying is very true for a lot of people. You know, you are susceptible to, you know, being deluded and to just believe in anything. And you don't want to be credulous, but at the same time, you don't want to just completely ignore everyone's and just people all around the world who will tell you they've had personal experience. It's not, you know, there are people there.
Yeah, I can't take it away from them.
You know, they have.
Yeah, I can't take that away from them, you know, but we can get them to investigate, you know, possibly. So.
Right. And personal experience is the worst form of evidence that we have, because we can't prove that they are interpreting the event correctly. That's the problem.
Yeah, I get it. I know, but it's not that you can't prove it. Yeah, I mean, sure, you can't prove it. I agree with that. The thing is, do you negate it, though?
I think Jay and Mike are both saying very specifically the same thing. These people had the experience. We're not debating that. What we're saying is that we don't agree with the interpretation of the experience being supernatural.
Nor could it have any motivational impact on your beliefs, because it's necessarily first person, right? If I told you, hey, hold on real quick. I was actually just revealed all the information. I had a personal experience. And by the way, David, you're wrong, right?
What do you mean?
I'm saying I just now had a revelation, right? Naturalism spoke to me. There are no gods. You're wrong. Okay. Now, did my revelation and experience, was that convincing to you in any way?
Of course not.
Exactly. So someone's anecdotal testimony about an experience, it sounds absurd when we flip it that way, right? Oh, I had an experience and like there are no gods. Will you take my experience? It doesn't motivate the other person because it's necessarily first person.
Yeah, you're right. I agree with that. I think that's just a rational argument. Like I can't disagree with that, because I mean, I felt the same way until I had the experiences now. You know, that made a difference. So I was like, okay,
sure.
Everybody's not just crazy, you know, because...
I can't take that away from you.
Right. But I get it. It's not convincing for the other guy on the other side, which I don't... But see, well, you know, I forgot his name. He just chimed in. He said, you know, he was like defining spirituality and all of that. For me personally, it would be in regards to being a Christian. You know, that whole concept. So that's anything.
Right. There's over 1,000 different denominations. There's over 1,000 different denominations, and you may be 1,001 for all.
There's not over 1,000 different Bibles. There's not 1,000 different Bibles, though.
But there's 1,000 different interpretations of that Bible, and they all fundamentally disagree on what they mean. So I'm not sure that really gets you anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's hard to argue that stuff. Like, that really does suck for you know, for people on this side. But I think that's just a result of man. But at the same time,
I agree, it's a result of man.
It's just like, well, you're an atheist, so you think we're all crazy anyway. But,
no, I don't think you're crazy.
At the same time, though, well, you know, I don't mean crazy. I just mean, you don't think our experience, like you said, or like one of you said, you don't think it's interpreted the right way.
Correct.
So, you know.
Yeah, David, I want to make.
We're crazy.
No, I want to express that very, very specifically. You seem very, like, you seem epistemically humble. You seem like you care, to the degree that a lot of people, I think, in the other position, or at least I can say for myself, did not. So I, like, have immediate, just immense amount of respect for you in the way that you look, because I've over-talked you a bunch. You've conducted yourself very well. So I don't think nothing negative in that sense at all. I actually even have in the live chat here, I had it typed up, but I didn't. I thought I pressed enter, but I was like, I really like this guy because I enjoy when someone listens and they go, I see your point, and then here's my objection to that. That's, I really appreciate you, the way you conduct
that. Yeah, that's a really good way to have a conversation. Definitely appreciate it. But
yeah, see, thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Davian. We appreciate the call.
All right, man. Y'all take it easy.
All righty.
Me too. Yeah, I always like when it's like, because I talk to a lot of people who call themselves spiritual, and it's like, I feel like I'm talking to a block of marble and there's no one there on the other side, you know, like at all. So.
Yeah, I agree. Let's take Sean in Montana. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad.
All right. I have hopefully a pretty easy question. When should you, like, give up on trying to make a family member, like, examine why they believe certain things? Like, for bullet point context, grew up young earth creationist, and over the past couple years, I've gotten in a few discussions with my parents, and they acknowledge that there are parts of the Bible that probably have human influence and are probably not correct, like slavery and such like that, but they still hold certain beliefs about gay people and trans people that I disagree with. And I don't know, it's just like talking to a brick wall sometimes. So yeah,
I get that.
When do you
you stop when they set boundaries and when you think you're going to break the relationship before you change their mind.
Okay, that makes sense.
If you think they're going to do something,
follow up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So if your sister is trans and your parents are not acknowledging that, is it immoral to keep spending time with them and keep trying to have the discussion?
I think the question then becomes, what's more important to you, your relationship with your sister or the relationship with your parent? And if your sister is getting mad at you because you continue to talk to them and she's already cut them off, then you may very well be at the breaking point with your sister. I would, you know, which relationship do you want to keep?
Well, considering, I think that my sister's position is valid, definitely hers. Like, my parents are the ones that are stuck in that way.
Right. And unfortunately, I mean, it gets into, like I said, it's which relationship do you really want to keep? Which one do you value more? And then don't break that one. And even if that means that you have to cut off communication with your parents or your sister to keep whichever one you want. There's no easy answer to this. There's no mathematical answer I can give you. There's no philosophical answer I'm aware of. J. Mike, what do you think?
I'm not necessarily convinced philosophy provides answers, but maybe analysis. I love philosophy, but yeah, I'm a skeptic through and through. But yeah, so this one's really tough for me because, like, I have a different kind of growth. I had a little bit of an easier time in that domain, I'll say. As my parents being Catholic, I didn't have any of those types of worries. And so this is something that my eyes and ears kind of open up more to listen, to get a perspective. But the one thing I guess I would echo first is, I don't know that it should be a true dichotomy to have to pick one or the other, but if it's, you know, the situation, if it comes down to that, like, I have to echo Jim's point, right? It's just only, you know, that circumstance. And since religion here's already poisoned it in the first place, I mean, it's not going to be a clean answer, right? Because it's already gotten messy from that position. So there's not going to be, like, necessarily there's not going to be a clean way to handle it. I don't know that I could offer any advice other than Because ultimately, you're going to be the one that's going to know what side to play, right? And what side I would cut off. You know, for me, it's going to be easy to say I'll cut off any of the qualities that no longer seem to be the qualities that I want to associate myself around or with. And if that's an easy decision for you as it is for me, then the answer should spell itself out. But some people, you know, I can't speak for you. And that's my hard part, right? It's hard. I can't really give advice in that sense.
Yeah.
Right.
So hopefully that came out clear. It's hard for me to kind of to express that because it's I want to say the right things, you know, and I don't want to give wrong information to somebody in a tough time, if you could understand. So.
Right. No, I think both of you are pretty clear. I guess, do you know of any way to get somebody to recognize like cognitive dissonance on their own? Like they can acknowledge that certain things in the Bible were influenced by people, but apply like some weird filter to key beliefs that they already held about like...
You tried SE? People.
Is there any way to...
Yeah, street epistemology is the best way, but it's not easy and it's not short. And dealing with family members, it's not going to be without an emotional cost, at least in my experience.
Right.
Yeah, and that's kind of sometimes I have a hang up on that because it's going to be so dependent on how people are and their receptiveness towards certain conversations in the first place. So some people just get hostile if you tell them you like their shirt. So, you know, it's just really going to depend.
Yeah, that's true. Everybody reacts to everything differently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Okay. I guess
I'm sorry we couldn't give you
street epistemology.
I will give you one piece of advice that I kind of want to kick myself for not doing. And that is, I won't really call it advice, but I would say you should look into communities, right? There's fan-run groups. We promote them on Talk Heathen, Atheist Experience. There's other groups. There's Discords. This isn't the only time we've heard this story. It's hard to give the right answer, and it's not going to be the last time we hear it. And so what that speaks to me is that there's clearly a lot of people out there looking to connect and try to find the answers, or at least like have a conversation where maybe, you know, they can get to it. And so I speak from experience. The only reason I'm sitting here now is because I reached out in those types of communities and talked with different people through like more of the critical thinking process and wanting to get, you know, people that were already, you know, in on this for years. And so I think on the same end, you can get that from the emotional support as well as potential answers or people that will have time to really analyze what you're saying from like a longevity standpoint.
For sure. I've been in touch with Recovering from Religion for a little bit, and I'm planning to sit in on some of their like Zoom meetings. Just to get in touch with other people who have been going through something similar, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool beans.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
That's the best you can do. Find a community and
talk to both of you in person.
All right.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling. And
thanks, Sean.
Yeah. Hopefully you get something that kind of gets you in the right direction there from what to do next.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Have a good evening.
Bye, guys.
See you.
Bye. All right. Well, that wraps up. We went a little long today, but that's okay. We got to some important calls. And so you got anything coming up, J. Mike?
Sad days of work until the weekend.
All right.
Yeah, you did that on purpose, Jim. You knew like I was smooth sailing and I mentioned it. And then you're like, nah, I'm gonna reel them back in. You know, both of these puns were not meant to be C-worthy, but I guess they are. So. I've used a lot.
All right.
Brian Sinker, I guess you just bring it out of me.
All right. Well, thanks, folks, for watching. We hope you had as much fun as we did. And we will see you next time we're on.
What will it take for you to start over?
It's time to get sexy. So watch Secular Sexuality live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.